The following podcast contains language that is not suitable for everybody.
This week on Super Skull, nostalgia is everywhere. We crunch the numbers and we dive into the best comic book ending of all time.
Curtis likes garbage.
Filth. And skulls. I'm just the kind who will break
your heart. I can see Nick in the Imperial...
I was wrong about you, Y-Wing pilot.
In the Imperial black uniform, just being like, the Death Star is operational on 5 different levels. Checklist, checklist, checklist. Like, Nick's the dude who makes...
Is that a dig at my logistical prowess?
Nick's the dude who makes sure that the trash is working effectively on the Death Star.
Somebody's got to do that. That's an important job.
Nick's an administrator on the Death Star.
if their administration skills were a little stronger...
That's the thing.
What?
Yeah,
then that Death Star would still be a fully functioning, fully operational space station.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, politics aside, if you have to fix it from within, you know, you needed strong administrators that were going to like get in there and fix it from within. Some of like the xenophobia and the weird stuff that they had going on.
Yeah.
You can lob bombs at it from the outside.
Sure.
Hanging out with Ewoks and shit.
Ewoks are dope.
Can we talk about getting some handrails on those walkways over the endless reactor cores?
Well, we're not made of money.
Okay. All right.
Well, I mean, the Empire owns like every planet in the star system. So.
Clearly, they're not made of money, though, because there's just all these holes like crazy all over the place. You can tell they're working on a budget.
No, but what if you like need to vent some shit? Like, you got to have holes for that. Like, you got to imagine like the Death Star's got to vent some shit.
Sewage. So like, do they
you
have
just,
like a
you
probably
just eject it into the expanse of infinite space.
Got it. Get it. And
right?
Then it freezes instantly.
Uh-huh.
Because it's...
And then you weaponize it.
Then you, yes. Then
put
you,
it on a catapult.
You grab with the tractor beam.
Yeah.
And you launch
and you
it.
Fling it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
That's moving on.
Oh, it's just getting going. Alrighty, welcome to Super Skulls, your weekly new comic day audio digest from Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff like that since 1996. Recorded in partnership and within the Ann Arbor District Library and the Freedom Shrine. I'm your host, Nick Wybar, joined by Curtis Sullivan.
Hey, what's happening, y'all?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing so good.
We're doing a little early morning podcast.
Yeah, man. Comics, Mad Max, food, had a burger for dinner.
You did? This was all this morning?
This is yesterday.
You had dinner this morning?
I had dinner this morning, a hamburger for breakfast.
Marcus,
that sounds great.
Marcus Schwimmer.
Hello.
Is also at the table with us.
Have you ever done the bagel burger?
Oh, yes.
This is what it sounds like?
It's a hamburger. Instead of using a bun, you use a bagel.
That sounds laborious.
It's wonderful.
What kind of bagel do you have to rock to make that work, though?
So I like to use an everything bagel.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But I've also used an egg bagel. And if I'm feeling real saucy, a.k.a. I only have a certain amount of bagels left, I've even done the cinnamon raisin bagel, and it's not bad.
My mind is reeling. I don't have time to get into this, but you have to bite so hard on a bagel, and then by the time you get to the meat, you're still in the same pressure that you were using for the bagel, and it's just going to explode
it's
all
gotta
over you.
It's got to be a fresh, delicious bagel.
Nick, you're wrong, because the juice from the burger softens the bagel.
Ah, it's genius. I can't believe I never saw that.
It's so good.
We are in case you couldn't tell, a comic book podcast.
Yep, absolutely.
We talk about new comics that release every single week. Our podcast is going to go up a little bit late.
So sorry.
The studio was occupied during our normal recording time, so we're recording on the day of our new releases. Today, in the day of Doom, September 16th, 2015. So this will go up sometime on Wednesday or Thursday, we think.
Yeah.
We hope.
Yeah, it'll be Wednesday. It'll be fine. It'll be fine, probably.
Yeah.
So let's dig right in. Oh, before we go into our big picks, we have a big event coming up.
We do. On October 4th, Eisner Award-winning comic creator Gene Yang is going to be visiting both Ann Arbor and Grand Rapids, both of our locations.
Did you say Gene Yang?
Yeah.
Who was Gene Yang?
Gene Yang is a wonderful comic creator. You may know him from the Avatar The Last Airbender series.
Uh-huh.
His own creative work, Shadow Hero.
Go on.
American Born Chinese.
Oh, that one's very popular.
It's very, very popular. And he's coming out with a new book called Secret Coders.
Yeah. When's that? That's soon, right?
It's the end of September.
September 29th.
Nice.
Yeah. Yep. And we got a little preview copy at the shop. It looks wonderful.
I read it.
Did you like it?
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's very, it's totally all age friendly. It's all about like coding
and like binary coding.
Oh, it's that kind of coding.
Yeah, it's about these kids that are at a school that's kind of like, it's as if coding was magic, and they're at like a Hogwarts for coding.
Coding kind of is magic.
I'd agree.
Well, so would Gene Yang, or at least through the premise of this book.
Yeah. Nice. We're super excited to have him. More information on our Facebook pages.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be a blast. He's a really, really cool, nice guy. He's excited to meet everyone. It's going to be a hoot.
I'm jazzed. I get to pick up Gene from the airport, and then I get to ferry him to Vault of Midnight.
This is your kind of this is your standard thing when we pick up creators or when we have big names at the shop. You get to pick them up from the airport and hang out with them for a little bit.
That's really cool, being trapped in a car with some of my favorite comic book people.
Are you going to make a sign?
Maybe I should.
You should make a sign.
I shouldn't hold it up, says Gene Yang.
I feel like we should record that drive.
Wow.
That's not a bad idea.
And then it's just you talking to them.
We'll see.
That probably would be really uncomfortable for the creator now.
Don't let
him
know. Don't let him know.
Hey, get in the car.
No, that's worse.
we're recording now.
Well, we would tell him ahead of time. I'm going to think about this.
Yeah.
Because that's like guaranteed, because it's hard to find time for creators to come in for an interview for the podcast every single time. It's not always something that we, but Curtis has always got to pick them up from the fucking airport.
That's true. And then I got to drive them to Grand Rapids. That's like a 2-hour drive.
Yeah, that's a lot of time.
So, we'll be hanging out a lot.
Oh, we're going to be.
Because Jerry Seinfeld does something like this with comedians.
Comedians in cars getting coffee.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But this time it's comic creators in a car with Curtis.
Hey.
Comic creators in a car with Curtis.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to rig your car with 1,000 microphones.
Nice.
It's going to be a hoot.
I love this idea.
But yeah, Gene Yang, October 4th, pick up his stuff now. It's Shadow Hero is just an amazing, amazing book.
All kidding aside, if you have not read, I mean, he's writing Superman right now.
Yep.
He's just absolutely one of the best writers in comics.
Yeah, what else did he do? He's got so much. Boxers and Saints.
Boxers and Saints
great.
Was this like, it was the about the Boxer Rebellion told from both sides of the conflict. Mm-hmm. And it was a graphic novel. A piece. So there's a boxer's book and then a saint's book, and they were both full-blown graphic novels about the opposite sides of the Boxer Rebellion. It was so good.
Yeah.
All of his stuff is really good.
We're super pumped to have him.
Shadow Hero was one of my favorite books of the past few years.
Yeah.
Very good. So, that's Gene Yang coming in on October 4th. He'll be in Ann Arbor and in Grand Rapids. And as Marcus mentioned, more info on our Facebook page.
Absolutely.
Should we mention also that we're getting a new website? Does anybody care about that?
I care.
I'm super jazzed. It looks good.
I think we're at the point now when we can comfortably announce that the new website is going to be launching within the next week or so. If you have any interest, if you give a shit about Vault of Midnight and would like to help us test the new website, drop us a line. We're looking for testers.
Beta testers.
Beta testers.
Be a Vault of Midnight beta tester.
Just to help us like click around and poke around the new site and see what's working and what's not working. We would love your feedback. This is a big deal. It looks really, really good.
Yeah, Phil Wong's doing a number on it.
Phil Wong is killing it. Our designer at Vault of Midnight. He's done a bunch of stuff for Super Skull. He did our Super Skull website, superskullshow.com. He's done a bunch of our merch, our hats and the t-shirts. We'd be in the tall grass if it wasn't for that dude.
Absolutely. Very true.
We started talking about this last week and we didn't have time to get into it, but that guy's awesome.
Irreplaceable.
He's irreplaceable. So all of those things, Gene Yang on October 4th, our new website is launching really soon. If you would like to have a look at it, then shoot us a line. Send it to superskull@vaultofmidnight.com and I will send you the stuff that you need to know. Speaking of Super Skull shirts.
Awesome.
We should formally announce that there are Super Skull shirts available.
They're so fly.
Hey, who designed those shirts?
That was Phil Wong again.
What?
He's a dynamo.
The guy's everywhere. Well,
the shirts cost some measurable amount of money.
Federal U.S. dollars, please.
They're full color. They look beautiful.
Yeah.
We'll put a picture up on the website.
They're very retro.
VG Kids printed them for us.
VG Kids printed the Phil Wong design.
Yeah, it's a 7-screen design.
Yep.
Very awesome.
It turned out really, really well. So that's Super Skull hats are now available and Super Skull shirts.
Rep.
Nuts.
Rep your podcast.
What do you mean?
Rep. Represent. Represent your
rep.
Rep.
I thought you said rap.
Rep your podcast.
I was like, on the spot, like just start freestyling like right now?
No, rep your podcast.
Got it.
Yeah.
Very good. So all that stuff aside, we hit all those bases. Let's talk about comic books.
Let's do it.
What do you guys think? Every week, there's a smattering of comics. Sometimes just dozens and dozens of comics every single week. It's maddening. There's too many. And we're here to help guide you. So every week we each pick one. If you're only going to get a few things this week, we think you should consider the following. Marcus, what was your pick?
My pick this week is Captain America White by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale.
Ooh.
This book has been supposed to be coming out for a while now.
Yeah, when did the Zero issue of this come out?
Oh, man.
3 years ago?
3 years ago, yeah.
At least.
Yeah, and this is part of a series. There was also Spider-Man Blue.
Daredevil Yellow.
Daredevil Yellow, right. So this is part of like this larger series that these guys are doing. But this is the origin story of Captain America told by these two wonderful creators. And it is just a wonderful blast from the past. I am in total love with it. It's just Steve Rogers at his best. And these two creators take kind of a fresh look at that Captain America origin story. And we get a little pop in from Nick Fury and Dum Dum Duggan, who's like one of my favorite Marvel characters of all time. He wears a bowler hat that's really iconic and has a handlebar.
So what does Captain America at his best to you, what does that mean?
Captain America at his best is a guy who realizes that not so long ago, he was just a scrawny kid trying to enlist. And then this thing happens, he gets the super soldier serum, and he becomes this icon of the war effort. But he remembers where he came from. And a lot of this book focuses on his relationship with Bucky Barnes. And kind of Bucky Barnes as
the... That is the crux of both issues,
yep,
really.
Yep. And, it's for a long time, you know, Bucky is trying to join Cap on this adventure. And he's not sure if Bucky's ready or if he wants the responsibility. I think it's a really interesting moment to get inside Steve's head and see how this whole sidekick thing plays out. The sidekick has been done so poorly so many times, but this comic really is focusing in, like, what does it mean to have a sidekick? It's not just someone, someone who just runs around and says, gee willy, when you do something cool. There's responsibility there, and it's great. There's a training montage in this particular issue where Cap's training Bucky, and it's done so
well. Yeah, he spends
well.
A lot of time in both of the books, because they in this issue that releases today, which is how much money?
It's a whole $4.99
because it's a big book. It's got the Zero issue in there as well.
Yep.
And I had never read the Zero issue until this came out. But he does. There's a lot of anxiety about Bucky.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole thing, he's kind of like worried about Bucky and like, should I be bringing this kid into battle? And is this a good idea? And I know this kid.
Yeah. There's another really great scene where like they're getting ready. They're in Casablanca because they're fighting in Northern Africa, and Bucky's shaving to like get ready to go to the club because girls will be there.
Yeah.
And Steve's like, no, you're not going. Like, you're not ready for this. And Bucky has a really compelling argument. He's like, look, I've seen more combat than most people who are engaged in this theater of war. And you're not going to let me go to the club?
I can't go pick up some chicks.
Yeah. And it's a really interesting thing. Like, it gives this, what I love about this book is it gives so much depth to the sidekick relationship.
Well,
and that's an area that we rarely get to see.
I like how old-timey it is. I recently read Captain America number one, the very first ever Captain America comic from 1941.
Yeah.
And they borrow so heavily. It's almost a retelling. I mean, they do their own thing with it and expand on it, but it really has that hokey, old-school 40s feel.
For what sure. do they borrow? Are there like moments lifted whole cloth from the original
absolutely.
One?
Absolutely.
Do you remember which?
Yeah,
which
sure.
Moments?
The way Bucky finds out who Steve Rogers is.
That's in there?
That's okay. Straight from the original Captain America comic. Mm-hmm. The Sarge. So the dynamic between this kind of sergeant character in Captain America is real goofball. It's almost Beetle Bailey in the initial Captain America.
Yeah.
And super hilarious.
So the idea is that like, Steve Rogers, they don't know that Steve Rogers is Captain America in this version.
His superior officers
do not
know.
So his superior officer's just like, I can't wait to get Steve Rogers off the base.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you want?
You're a real pain in my ass, Rogers.
Exactly.
But he's Captain America, like, in secret.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he sort of plays up, you know, when this was kind of more of a common trope, he's sort of a doof.
Yeah.
You know, like a little clumsy, like Steve Rogers has got to, like, act like, you know, a little Clark Kent, you know?
Yeah, this big corn-fed doof.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's Captain America.
But he's yeah. Captain America.
Yeah.
Which they don't really do much, and they change that in Captain America very early. Like, that goes all the way just a few issues into the original Captain America.
Sure.
So I like how they kept a lot of that kind of those quirks that were there initially.
Yeah, when Steve's at the bar in Casablanca, everyone's like, oh, who's that guy? Oh, it's Steve Rogers, you know, got detached from his unit. you know, and he's, you know, Steve Rogers, there's all these women hanging off of him and he's totally oblivious. He has no idea.
Yeah.
Man, this is a great book. I was looking forward to it and it fired on all cylinders for me.
Yeah.
Not for you.
Well,
talk to me about it,
Well,
Goose.
So I say this in full knowledge that I'm sitting in an enclosed room with two massive Captain America fans.
Sure.
So I want you guys to be gentle with
no,
me.
No, go
here.
Get up in it.
It just didn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
It was the art I found a little kind of overwrought.
Oh, interesting.
If that makes sense. It's kind of like overpainted if in some ways. I don't need any more. So Captain America, I love certain Captain America stories. I
yes.
love what's happening with old Captain America. I love the Ed Brubaker stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's making a character that's been around for a very long time that had pretty much exhausted like what that character is capable of.
Yeah, what you thought you could, you know, you've seen it all.
Yeah,
you thought,
and he just totally, and Ed Brubaker takes a different spin on it, like in terms of, you know, what does America mean today and how does that change Captain America in, you know, the 2000s or the aughts, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what this brings to the table except for nostalgia.
I mean,
makes sense.
I'd agree with you.
Yeah, the pleasure is definitely rooted in the nostalgia factor.
Yeah.
For sure. So for me, the what I find enjoyable about this, I do really like what they're doing with the sidekick. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And the sidekick relationship rarely gets the attention that it deserves. Batman does a really good job with it. But other than that, we have a lot of sidekicks and they're just kind of there. So I really appreciated that they took the time to like work that out. But for me, like, you know, it's, I kind of like going back. This was the same thing when they reissued Will Eisner's The Spirit. The reason I really liked that book. It was, there's a lot of really cool books out there that are dealing with the modern stuff. Sometimes I just like to sit back and get taken back to when comics were like first coming out. And I think that's fine. I think it's okay to get books like that, that like run on the nostalgia factor.
Well, and I think, you know, I love this book because it is so goofball. You know, if you go back and read old Stan Lee Marvel comics,
mm-hmm.
they're really goofy.
Yeah.
They're not for everybody. Everybody
Absolutely.
Cannot put up with that style.
Sure.
So I did enjoy this book. I do think Tim Sale's art is progressing into a style that I'm not as in love with as I used to be.
It's changed a lot, but you know, he's been making comics for a long time.
Yeah, it's morphed. So I don't know if I'd recommend this particular Captain America to everyone.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're cool with that old school goofball, you know, golden age 40s comic style.
Yeah. Man, I dug the art. I really liked it. I thought it was different. For me, like that painted aspect only adds to the nostalgia factor a little bit. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you know, and as much as I like this guy's art, like the whole time I was reading it, I couldn't help but thinking I'd like it more if Darwin Cook was drawing it.
That's what I was thinking. I swear
you know?
To God, that's exactly what I was thinking.
And as I go, right, I sometimes find myself comparing Tim Sale to a I wish Darwin Cook was here.
Yeah.
Artist.
That's what I feel often when I'm reading Tim Sale stuff.
And I don't mean to pick on the guy.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to do that. But it's a hard style to do. It's hard to thread the line between nostalgia and classic old school Americana art, comic book art,
yeah.
but still give it
something to like move it forward.
Yeah.
Like for all of this stuff, and maybe I'm totally on my own here. I totally acknowledge that. I'm not making a broad statement that like, you know, this is how comics should be by any means.
Yeah.
But for these really old characters, like I'm really looking for something to like justify them. I'm really looking for something to kind of like, what's moving them forward? What's making them relevant? Like, what are they doing with Captain America that I've never seen done before? You know
yeah.
what I mean? Because at this many, 60 years in, 60, 75 years in, I think we need that. I think you need to justify your existence at some point.
Yeah.
And this just didn't do that for me. It didn't add anything new to the table.
I agree with you, but I got time for a little slice of apple pie.
Yeah.
I hear you.
You know?
I
yep.
hear you.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yep.
So that's Captain America White, Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. Long time coming.
Long time coming.
It definitely came out.
I would say check out their other works. Like, you know, we're talking about this. I thought Daredevil Yellow.
I really want to go back and read those.
Was when I read it, it's been a while, but it was one of my favorite Daredevil stories.
Spider-Man Blue did something for me.
It's a nice book.
Good.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So. Curtis had a pick this week, and I was reading comics last night. I'm reading all this stuff.
Yeah.
And the entire time, I was just thinking, I just want to pick Space Riders.
I know.
Like, it already came out.
I know.
But I just want to pick Space Riders. What's your pick this week, Curtis?
It's Space Riders, man.
Yeah, that was a really good idea.
I can't help it. So last week we talked about Dying in the Dead, I think, you know, because 3 finally came out. And it's just been a really, really long time, or maybe...
Last week, a couple weeks ago.
A couple weeks ago. This is another thing. So Space Riders came out. We sold it really well at the comic shop, but I think it's underread.
It absolutely is.
And I think it's one of the best. It's just so wild. I am in love with this book. So this book, Space Riders, is Alex Zaritte and Fabian Rangel Jr., and they are killing it. Alex Zaritte's art makes me crazy.
Describe the art.
Thrasher Magazine. A skateboard from 1984. The colors are garish and at first glance almost sloppy, but they're perfect.
It is. If you just flip through this book, you'd give it a quick no, I think. If you were on the fence and you just kind of like give it a quick glance, but if you stop and look at what's happening here,
yeah,
it's like, this is the, oh my goodness, this is the nostalgia that I'm talking about. So this is taking the thing, this is like, you know, recalling a type of art that we've all seen.
Yeah.
Right? From, what would you call it? It's, you know.
I don't even know. It's definitely rock and roll poster art. It's punk rock, skateboard,
yeah,
van shoes, 1984. It reminds me of Thundar the Barbarian.
And that's exactly it.
It reminds me of, I'm trying to think.
And it's recalling a really specific type of really cheesy, you know, sci-fi comic or like bad sci-fi novel, right? But it's taking all of it, it's being smart, it's pushing it forward. It's like doing weird stuff with it based on what you know about the genre and then pushing beyond that. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. I mean, there's just shades of so much weird stuff going on. I mean, there's even Mobius stuff, like the robot sidekick crew member lady. She's like a Soriyama painting.
So we should say, what's the premise of this book?
So this is Captain Pellegro and the
Capitan.
Capitan, excuse me, Pellegro.
Don't call him Cap.
Of the skull ship Santa Morte. And he flies a skull ship around space. He's a space rider. Stuff happens. He gets banned from being a space rider. He gets shut down for a year.
In the first issue,
first page. But the dialogue in this book, let me read a little bit here.
Please.
I am Captain Pellegro of the starship Santa Morte. I'm a goddamn galactic killing machine, and I don't take shit from nobody. His crew members are Mondo and Yara. Mondo is a...
Mono?
Mono.
Mm-hmm.
Mono?
Yeah.
He's a space orangutan.
He's my favorite.
He's a very spiritual space orangutan.
Yeah, he's so cool.
He's on a mystic religious journey. He's also a total badass killing machine. This spread right here, it's a 2-page spread. It's super red with other shades of red. The crew is colored in blue. Like, so Capitan Pellegro and Mono and Yara, they're all blue, right? Which shouldn't work.
Yeah.
All the laser blasts are yellow, and he's just screaming, "That's right, motherfuckers," as they're destroying all these bad guys.
It's awesome.
It's my favorite thing ever. So they reprinted issues 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
They all came out today.
Mm-hmm.
Issue 4 is in 2 weeks. That's the last issue.
There's no way this book isn't going to continue.
This is one of my favorite comics of the whole year.
Yeah, there hasn't been announced that it would continue formally. I sure hope it does.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're going to do a graphic novel collection of all of them in October, end of October. It's exclusive to the direct market, you guys.
Oh, really?
They're not selling it nowhere else, only to comic shops.
That's great.
Thanks a lot, Black Mask Studios.
I'll tell you what, this Black Mask is really starting to pick up.
They got some heat right now.
They got some heat going right now,
yes,
and they seem really cool.
Yep.
What's their other, We Can Never Go Home?
We Can Never Go Home.
Yeah.
Same thing, $9.99, volume 1, direct market exclusive.
Yeah.
No Amazon, no internet, no bookstores.
Whatever they're doing,
so
they're doing it right.
Steve Niles is one of the founding fathers of Black Mass Studios.
Oh, really? Is he involved in what's going on with it right now?
I think just kind of overlording.
Okay. Tell me about Steve Niles.
Steve Niles, great horror writer. Most famous for 30 Days of Night with Ben Temple Smith, which got made into a movie and maybe even 2 movies. But he's done a ton. Steve Niles has done a ton and ton and ton of stuff.
Yeah, and still does today.
Yeah, so... love that guy. Great horror writer. So Space Riders, can't say enough. Their patch is the best. I'm going to find out if they actually have a patch that I can buy.
It's a very nice patch.
It is so damn good.
Someone who really likes patches.
It is a dude in a spacesuit with a skull in the helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a total infringement on a Vault of Midnight intellectual property.
Yeah, The Lonely Spaceman.
Yeah.
Yeah, they saw that and they, you know, I'll call it a cool shout out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
From them.
From them.
To us.
Yeah.
Okay.
They love us and they were like, hey, here, how can we give a nod to Vault of Midnight in our comic book?
Just, but be cool about it.
Yeah.
Be subtle and be cool about it.
Yeah.
But let's just give them a little.
It's kind of like that spaceman from Scooby-Doo.
Oh, is he in Scooby-Doo too?
He is.
They were giving a shout out to us also.
They were way
20
back.
20 years before we existed.
Yeah.
Space Riders is one of those books that, like, I don't know how to recommend to everybody.
Yes.
But I want everybody to read it.
I want everyone to read it.
Because it's, you kind of just need to go with it and just kind of have fun. Don't think about it too hard. But if you do think about it too hard, you will be rewarded.
And you don't want it to be white noise, right? Because we say this all the time, like, just check it out, even though you don't think it's your thing. Everyone should read Space Riders. This right now, there's this thing happening in comics, and I don't know if it's been happening, and I'm just now noticing.
Yeah.
But Space Riders, and then there's this other book that just came out from a guy named Benjamin Mara named Terror Assaulter.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's trash.
Yeah.
But it's perfect. It's the best. It's like, what if Chuck Norris, his best movie was he's a one-man war on terror, and it's XXX rated, and it's crazy violent, and the dialogue is laughably nuts.
Did you read this Terror Assaulter, Marcus?
I did not yet.
This is, I would be very curious to get your take on it.
Marcus will probably hate it.
Yep.
I love Chuck Norris.
It's one of the best books of the year.
I love Chuck Norris.
I'm saying it right now. Terror Assaulter, One Man War on Terror, but it falls right into this category.
Yeah.
Like the guy who's doing Transformers, G.I.
Joe. Into the category of Space Riders.
Space Riders, yes. This kind of just crazy, super bad, super good, super stylized.
I'm just trying to the connections between this and Captain America White in my mind are like stark, because that is the thing. It's like if you update a book, you tell, which is, and it's trash.
Sure.
And there's lots of comics that exist like this.
Right.
And if you, but you add a sense of like pacing and a sense of getting it, and maybe the dialogue's a little bit better, and the art is bad in a good way. Like, it's bad, but it's stylized.
It's super well thought out. So when I say trash, and I think when you say it too, Nick, that's a compliment.
Yes.
That is a very hard thing to do well.
Yes.
Because otherwise you get into gratuity and you get into, like, stuff for the sake of itself. That's not this. That's not Space Riders. That's not Terror Assaulter. You remember this book maybe a month ago called American Barbarian?
Yeah.
From Tom Scioli?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Oh, brother. There's this thing happening, and those are the three books that I can call to mind right now, but there's probably a few others that are doing bad in the most perfect.
Yep, and it's tough. It's a tough sell.
Conscientious way. It is.
Would you put the humans in that category?
Absolutely.
I would
totally.
Too.
Yeah. The auteur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, there's, and these are books, yeah, you got to be 18 to read them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, no, Space Riders, you probably should be 18.
No, you totally should.
There's
but
some boobs and swearing.
Right, but it's maybe not quite as gross as some of those other ones.
Sure. Yeah, Terror Assaulter is like...
That's a fully X-rated book. That's,
it is.
Yeah.
And it is...
I'm going to read it today.
It had me squealing.
Yeah.
I don't squeal very often. I was like shaking in my seat. I'm like standing up.
Can you give,
like,
us a sense of what that sounded like?
No. Okay. I will not do that into the microphone.
Damn it, Curtis.
Nick, you claim to know my likes and dislikes.
Yeah. I don't claim to. I objectively do.
Do you think I will like Terror Assaulter?
No.
You don't?
You will despise it.
No.
Interesting.
It's tainted now because we've talked about it so much.
No, but I'm going to give it a read. I'm going to give it an objective read today.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Oh, my goodness.
I do want to know.
Yeah, so Benjamin Mara, check that guy out on the internet, you guys, because he's so damn cool.
But how do you feel about Space Riders?
I love Space Riders.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Love it.
Nice.
So there's, maybe.
I love Humans. Humans is a great book.
All right.
That first issue did not do it for me, but once they started getting into, like, the Vietnam, you know, war commentary, and I saw that book had a little bit more teeth to it than just...
Terror Assault could do it for you.
Maybe.
It's much more graphic, but...
Yeah.
But I don't think the graphic thing is what turned you off.
No.
Yeah. So, you know, if we can diatribe just a little bit more. So I was going down the internet hole on Benjamin Mara, and he loves Fletcher Hanks.
Benjamin Mara, creator of which one?
Terror Assaulter.
Okay, got it.
He loves this guy called Fletcher Hanks.
Yeah.
And we at the comic store have been deeply in love with Fletcher Hanks for years. So this guy's story is crazy. He did comics for like 3 years under like 4 different pen names. to super weird names. He disappeared for 20 years, left his wife and his son, and was found dead on a park bench. And his story is incredibly interesting and super weird. Like, this guy disappeared off the face of the earth and was found 20 years later dead after doing the weirdest comic books for 3 years.
Yeah.
He did a character called a Fantoma, who's like this flaming skull-faced, like, Shauna the She-Devil character who, protects the Amazon rainforest. But she never acts until, like, half the forest has been destroyed, and it's the same story every time.
Yeah.
He's got another character called Stardust the Super Wizard. And it's the best stuff. And the reason I bring it up is because these kind of books...
They're calling back to that.
They are. Somehow, these guys are aware of how bad good, like Fletcher Hanks and some of these other guys in the late 30s who were... There were no rules. They're just doing the weirdest, craziest comic books.
Maybe that's it. Yeah.
You know, it's just an idea machine. It's just free-flowing, you know, unfettered... stuff.
Yeah, it's the Wild West. Nobody knows what's going to work and what's not going to work.
Yeah, and so now these guys have all that they can call from, and they've got their
these
whole...
These guys being...
Benjamin Mara and Alex Arit.
And
all these, you know, the guys doing Humans, who I'm blanking on the Humans crew. But
Tom Neely,
yeah. Exactly. They can call that stuff up, but then they got the whole world of weird pop culture that's come in between, too.
Yeah.
So...
It's just a weird niche of comics that's like... Just like everything in comics right now, it's just like having this really cool moment that nobody saw coming.
For sure.
And I just love it. I love that Captain America White came out the same week as these other, because they're doing different things.
Super different.
But kind of calling back to similar themes. So,
do I want to get a giant chest tattoo of the Senta Muerte?
Of the skull?
The skull.
On your chest?
Yeah, the spaceship.
You do want to do that.
Okay.
Are you sure you don't want it on your lower back?
My lower back.
Yeah. Tramp stamp?
Well, space tramp stamp.
Got
sure.
It.
No, I don't.
Oh.
Okay, well, moving on. That was my big pick.
That was a long way around Space Writers. Read Space Writers.
Yes. Do it.
Sorry, go ahead,
Mark. I was going to say, Nick, what do you got for us?
I'm going to be really quick and just talk about Tokyo Ghost. This is from Rick Remender and Sean Murphy. It is the story of a future where everybody is... completely taken over by their addictions, essentially. The world has gotten so bad, like everything's completely trashed, and the only way to exist is to kind of take pills that elicit feelings and to be, you know, totally tapped into the internet and TV shows and whatever distractions you can, you know, drugs or whatever, all of the time.
So this is the future, you're saying?
Yeah, this is the distant future.
I see. Good.
Not right now.
Okay.
By any means.
Got it.
It was really good. It did not really grab me until the very end.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
And then it grabbed me.
Because I thought it was doing a lot of stuff where I was like, oh, I see what you're doing here.
Yeah.
You know?
So specifically, it's the story of Debbie Decay.
Yes.
Is that her name?
Yep. Yes.
And Led?
Led, yes.
And,
LED.
Yeah, so they are basically cops for hire, more or less, like private detectives, and they're on their last case at the beginning of this issue. Their last case before they can get out of town. They can finally get out of this place. And Debbie Decay is clean,
tech-free.
She's tech-free. She does not partake in any way. And Led is a complete... like the uber example of the addict, like
totally
in front of his face, and it's really well drawn and really cool. In front of his face all of the time is this array of like porn and TV shows and like BuzzFeed lists and like always going in front of his face all of the time. He's completely fully addicted.
Even when he's driving his motorcycle at 120 miles an hour through a stadium full of people.
Right.
He's entirely plugged in.
So Debbie Decay and Led have to go get this dude. They have to go kill this guy, and then they're done, this criminal, basically. And Sean Murphy's art, as always, is stunning.
I love it.
His stuff's getting better, I think, in terms of, like, the world design and, like, the tech stuff. We were talking earlier about the fact that he basically draws, like, three kinds of people.
Sure.
He draws, like, a big dude. He draws, like, a very thin woman, and then there's the extras.
Yeah,
more or less. This is like in a lot of his books. These are the things, at least for the past few books that he's done.
Yeah, I'll give you that. He's got a style where, yeah, exactly. He's got, you know, six faces.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, It works for him because he's got a lot of style.
It works for him. It's super stylized, and everything else about the world like really starts to breathe, especially kind of halfway through this book. So I enjoyed it. I also really liked how much they packed into this first issue. Like, this could have been six issues. Like, they could have been looking for this dude, trying to like get this bad guy for an arc of a comic.
Totally.
And instead, they packed it all into this one issue, and now we're going to go do something totally different, and I don't know what it's about.
Yeah.
So that was really neat. Is that a spoiler? That might be a spoiler.
So. I don't think so.
But it took a turn that I didn't expect.
And stylistically, the next issue looks like, yeah, totally different. Totally different color palette. And
from the previews that is even in the back of this book.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's Tokyo Ghost. It's an Image number one this week. Rick Remender and Sean Murphy. We should also probably mention Matt Hollingsworth is doing the coloring, and the coloring is beautiful.
Very nice.
Across this whole book.
Yep.
And super producer Rachel Polk wanted to point out that the lettering is spot on.
Nice. They
do this really interesting thing where this dude is controlling, this bad guy is controlling other people. He's like hacking into them and controlling them and speaking through them. And they do that through, you can tell that he's speaking through them through the lettering techniques that they use, like red text and stylized lettering. So it was really cool. Tokyo Ghost, number one. Scoop it. Check it.
Nice.
Let's move on to the poll box. What do you guys think?
Let's do that, man.
Let's do it.
Because there's more stuff every single week. We got a stack of books. What's on top?
The Simpsons Treehouse of Horror. This comes out every year.
It does.
A little Halloween special. It's excellent.
Mm-hmm. It's always good every single year.
Yep.
I'm going to go with the auteur Sister Bambi. Came out this week. I'm not going to talk about it too much, but this is issue 4. This is the last issue of Sister Bambi. So auteur volume 2 is wrapping up. And it was gross and fun, and I loved it.
Excellent. More trash for Curtis.
That's right.
More garbage. I'm going to pick The Island, number 3. This is was not a contender for the cover of the week, but it should have been.
Oh, yeah.
This is my cover of the week.
I think you're right.
This is Farrell Dalrymple on the cover. It's more of this Brandon Graham anthology. The folks that worked on it are hiding in here and are not immediately visible, but I am loving The Island. It's an anthology work. It's a bunch of different short stories that have been serialized over these few issues. Check it out. The Island, number 3 from Image.
Cool. It's important to point out Rat Queens, number 12, coming out this week. New artist again.
What's up, Rat Queens?
I don't know what's going on. One of my favorite books, and they just cannot keep an artist on that book.
But it's coming out.
I know, but it's so frustrating. I just want one artist to stick around.
Tess Fowler is the artist. I've seen her name on other stuff.
It's a great...
The art's nice.
No, the art is nice, but like, come on, Rat Queens.
You want a little consistency?
You're
in
one
your
of
life?
The best books out. Let's just get some consistency going.
Well, we can't blame those guys. You know, they've had some trouble. Their first artist, you know, that went south with some legal stuff. And their second artist, Stefan Zizibic.
Oh, yeah, sure. Is this Zizibic?
Yeah, that guy. He's got like 27 books going, so that's the conflict there. So... Curtis Wiebe, man, good on you getting this book out, but dang, it seems like it's been tough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Marcus, what do you got? Let's each do one more. What do you guys think?
Yeah, sure. Continuing the 50 Years of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, number 1, out this week. Really enjoyable book to continue.
That was cute.
Yeah, it was very cute. The Mockingbird, and last week was Quake.
Lumberjanes 18 is out this week. With art by local superstar comic artist Carolyn Nowak.
Carolyn Nowak!
She's awesome. She does the cover, she does the full interior, and she'll be on for the next 3 issues. So that is super exciting. Congratulations to her for getting this gig. She's worked on the book before, I think, on some backups and stuff.
Yeah.
That is incredibly cool.
I think she's just the best.
And this book is awesome. Lumberjanes again.
Continues to be awesome.
Still awesome.
Miracle Man came out this week. I was surprised by how excited I was that Miracle Man came out this week.
Yeah.
I loved that last issue, the first issue of the Neil Gaiman run, so much, and I was filled with glee that the second issue came out. Stoked.
A couple Star Wars books this week, you guys. Star Wars number 9 and Lando number 4. And what do we got for this week in Secret Wars, Marcus?
Oh, yeah. This week in Secret Wars, House of M number 3 is coming out. This book's getting a lot of love. Spider Island number 4. Spider-Verse number 5. A lot of spider going on this week. Secret Wars Journal number 5 is coming out. Infinity Gauntlet number 4. And Age of Apocalypse number 4 with worst cover of the
week. Oh, that's our worst cover of the week.
It's brutal.
Congratulations, Age of Apocalypse number 4.
Yeah,
Emma Frost.
Why is it the worst cover of the week?
Look
you guys?
At the butt cheeks.
Is it because there's some, it's not just two butt cheeks on the cover. What else is going
on? Well, it's just so Age of Apocalypse is doing this thing where it's and it knows what it's doing. It's hearkening to 90s comic art.
Yeah.
But on the front, it's just a very...
But in a bad way.
In a bad
way. It's nostalgia in a bad
way.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So on the front, we have Emma Frost in very little clothing. And it's just like everything I disliked about 90s art. We don't need it again. It's not doing anything cool. It's bad.
Yeah, she's got the broke back thing going again.
Yep.
Oh, such a nightmare.
Yep, everything's super angular and stupid and...
Yeah.
That cover sucks.
Yep, it sucks.
I didn't even notice it before until just now.
Yep.
But it sucks.
She got like this, yeah.
All right, let's move on to Happier Pastures.
Yeah, oh, and we wanted to say real quick that Secret Wars, they added a 9th issue.
Which is crazy.
So it was an 8-run, super crossover, we're all loving it. They added a 9th issue. Speculation is that hopefully we'll see it by December, the end of Secret Wars, but...
I'll believe it when I see it.
Exactly.
Because it's that book release schedule has been weird.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that a little bit in a moment.
Yeah.
So
that's This Week in Secret Wars.
That was This Week in Secret Wars, and that was your pull box for the week. Let's talk about the cover of the week.
We got two covers of the week this week because we couldn't decide. The variant cover for Captain America White, we all agreed, by Scotty Young, was totally badass.
Why? Here are the rules for cover of the week.
Yeah.
We can't just say it's badass.
We can't?
We can't just say it's awesome.
It's like really cool, though.
So Scotty Young has this style he's been doing with kids, babies,
yeah,
young people. And this one continues that tradition, but the Captain America he does is like full-on World War II cap, and it's got this really great red, white, and blue color scheme to it that really pops the Captain America in it. It's just, it's his style. You can tell it's Scotty Young right away. But the cap he's doing is like not that goofball. It's a really nice mix.
Just when I think that like I'm starting to get sick of the Scotty Young baby covers,
yeah,
he comes out with another cover that makes me just love it.
It's again. So nice.
And this is like, so Cap, baby Cap is all blue.
Yep.
His shadow behind him is red.
But it's striped.
But with stripes going through it, and it's against this big white background. It's like somehow really... kind of like dignified, even though it's goofy baby Cap.
Exactly.
Yep.
It's Captain America. It's like it feels important, but it's done in the silly style. Loved it. That's easily cover of the week.
That Captain America White logo is no joke too. That helps quite a bit, I think.
The logo up top, the text and font of the label or the title.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
It's quite nice. And Marcus pointed out the Constantine, the Hellblazer number 4 cover.
Yeah, I love this cover. So it's just it's a very orange, bright pumpkin orange cover. We don't see that a lot. It really draws you into the comic. And we have John Constantine on the cover smoking a cigarette in a kind of classic John Constantine way. But then through where his maybe vest would be under the jacket he's wearing, we see these two skulled figures. And the coloring is just so nice. And this cover has just a ton of depth to it. You're like seeing through John Constantine into this other street scene. I love it. I think the depth in it is just really phenomenal. And
I really like the pink smoke.
Yeah.
Colors
coming
are
off
nice.
Of his cigarette.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is really well colored.
Riley Rossimo, y'all.
Yep.
Oh, Riley Rossimo.
That guy can draw.
That's his cover? He does not do the interiors. He did the cover?
Correct.
That guy can draw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really like it. Just the depth alone on it really, really drew me in.
Those are our covers of the week.
Yep.
Let's do the numbers. Marvel Comics dominated a 36.67% market share this August with 7 of the top 10 single-issue spots of those 7. Secret Wars and Star Wars once again nabbed the top tier with Batman landing in third. The delay in Secret War titles probably denied Marvel a 40% market share and possibly dragged the entire industry sales numbers down by as much as 3%. But it was another month of growth for comics overall in August with the single issues and graphic novel market overall growing 6.45%. Besides The Walking Dead, Marvel and DC nabbed every spot in the top 25 until We Stand on Guard snuck in at number 23.
Interesting.
These numbers, once again, are direct market numbers, which are what, Curtis?
The comic book shops.
Comic book shops. That's the short answer.
Specialty shops.
Yep.
Yeah, the direct market. We get the shaft. No returnability. No returns.
It's hard out here.
It's hard out here on the front lines.
So what was the number one book?
So the number one book this month, Secret Wars number 5.
Cool.
Secret Wars has nabbed the top spot. I mean, I'd have to take a look, but it's I think every month since it's come out, it's nabbed the top spot.
And you said We Stand on Guard came in at 26?
23, so it did make it into the top 25.
Nice.
But other than that, we got The Walking Dead at number 7 and We Stand on Guard at number 23. Everything else is a Marvel or DC in the top 25.
In our store, it would be We Stand on Guard is number 1 and Secret Wars 5 would be number 2 for this same time.
Because there was no Saga.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Anything that you guys were curious about? For graphic novels, Walking Dead Volume 24 took the top spot. We see mostly big Marvel DC books until Saga Volume 1 gets in at number 9.
Oh, number 1 still.
Yeah, that's usually consistently in the top 20.
Love it.
Yeah, pretty much a month. Is there any books that you guys were wondering about or anything that you were curious about where it landed?
I would be super curious. So, Gene Yang Superman, I would be curious to know where that's at.
So, Superman number 43 was number 25.
Oh, nice.
That's right. 49,825 copies sold.
Cool.
For a respectable 25 spot.
So, DC has also been doing a lot of these new number ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to know, Martian Manhunter is one that has a book out this week, and it's a pretty cool little book. I'd be curious as to where it's at.
Martian Manhunter number 3 landed at spot number 108. Mm. 22,540 copies sold.
It came in barely behind Hank Johnson, Agent of Hydra, which we loved.
I'm so glad that Hank Johnson, Agent of Hydra, made it in there.
That is great news. That was a fun book. I think we were talking about Descender before the podcast.
Yeah.
Where that might be.
So Descender number 6 landed at the spot number 92.
It's in the top 100.
It is in the top 100.
That's great.
And the volume came out, but I think that was September, so we don't have those numbers available to us quite yet.
Yeah.
The delay in Secret Wars books.
Yeah.
I think is really interesting and how much they're affecting the entire market. So we were, the numbers overall for the industry were down a little bit in July,
mm-hmm.
And they were up a little bit in August, and they think it would have been up a lot more if these Secret Wars titles didn't get delayed. Mm. Like that's the power of Secret Wars right now, is that it can just drag the entire industry up. That's how huge those numbers are.
Well, when you talk about a book that's, I think, what were the numbers consistently? It's over 200K. You know, we're in the 200 to 250,000.
Yeah, Secret Wars number 5 is 204,000.
Yeah, so that's a big deal.
That's huge.
It's a big book.
Yeah.
Especially when you talk about other books, you know, when you start drastically, you know, you get into the number 15, 20 zone, 25, you're talking significantly less than that.
Yeah.
So
they also are flagging a little bit. We're finally starting to see them, like, slow down. The sales numbers for the Secret Wars and the Star Wars books together. They're not the massive juggernaut that they were for the last few months. The numbers overall are slowing down a little bit.
Too bad on the Star Wars. That book is still firing on all cylinders. Well, issue this week was phenomenal.
And for us, too, I just always wonder if the industry's kind of, you know, could do a better job. And by that, I mean retailers.
Because
mm-hmm. we are not going down on Secret Wars or Star Wars. They're getting reordered every single week. Every time Marvel does a new printing of Secret Wars, we bump the whole run across the board, and they all go.
Yeah. I would be really interested to know what our top 10, and that's what we'll do next month for the numbers.
Yeah.
I'm deciding. We'll compare the national sales numbers against Vault of Midnight numbers and see how they're different, because I think they look pretty different.
Yeah.
I think so.
It's a lot less. I mean, I think Secret Wars is still probably going to be up or near the top.
One or two, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because the reason I bring that up is because I talk to other retailers, I talk to Diamond guys,
mm-hmm.
and you just wonder if retailers are doing enough single issue reorders.
Right.
And by that I mean, you know, you sell out of a book and you're a retailer, so you're putting your butt on the line, and you got 100% sell through on a book. Do you move on, or do you dip your toe back in?
Those are gone. I got my money.
Yep.
Next book.
Exactly.
Or do you keep reordering it? And well, it's tough. It's harder to do that.
It is. Yep.
Once again, these numbers, as always, come to us from ICV2. that's where we're getting our sales charts. So those are the numbers.
Cool.
Comic books making money. You remember last week?
Vaguely.
We were talking about Star Wars costumes.
Yeah.
And uniforms.
We were talking about uniforms.
Did I say costumes?
You did.
Excuse me. And you made another of your patented...
blanket statements.
Wild blanket statements. Which usually just go out into the ether.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, we might go, Marcus. And
yeah.
And then we move on. But this time, this time we caused a little bit of a stir on the internet.
Well, so here's
very minor stir, but it was a little bit of a stir.
Here's something I forgot. So I consider myself like a sci-fi fan.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of sci-fi series.
Yeah.
Battlestar, Star Trek, Star Wars, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and what I didn't realize is that there are a lot of people out there who know drastically more about Star Wars than I do. And I realize that now because they have informed me of such.
So what was your original blanket statement?
My original blanket statement was that I really enjoyed that in the new Star Wars Shattered Empire comic that they are expanding the universe and adding nice little details like different colored flight suits to the pilots because the flight suits that we see in the movies are orange. That was my statement.
Mm. So on the face of it, who cares?
Right.
It couldn't possibly matter less. This is just a very small observation about a comic book. It was not your main point about the comic book.
It was not.
What was interesting is that like a strange number of people came forward to tell us that that was incorrect.
Yes. And two Jasons in particular on Facebook really came in. One Jason who works his profession. Is that he works on the Star Wars RPG, pen and paper RPG, which is super cool.
Oh.
And he has informed us that X-Wing pilots are the pilots that wear orange. Mm-hmm. That's where I got that observation from. A-Wing pilots wear green. B-Wing pilots wear red. And he was unsure about the Y-Wing.
But then...
not to worry. Second Jason came in and said, not only does he know that Y-Wing pilots wear gray, he also provided us with photo evidence of himself as a Y-Wing pilot for Halloween in a gray jumpsuit. Jason, great Halloween costume.
Yeah.
As a fan of the Y-Wing, I should have known this. I apologize. But yeah, my bad. Well, it is established canon that different fighter pilots wear different colored flight suits depending on their vehicle.
Yeah.
And that they've been assigned to.
Well, and the cool thing, like, we got to say thank you to the Jasons.
For sure.
Because they were incredibly cool. They didn't beat us up.
No, you know, nobody was a dick about it.
No, they just said, hey, dudes, peep this.
Yep.
And, you know, I will say, Marcus, that I did not key in on the different colors until this comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen all the Star Wars movies. It has to be. It's an embarrassing amount of times. 50 times each. All of them.
Yeah.
I never noticed that.
Yeah. And Jeff from our Grand Rapids location.
He, like, called.
He called during work hours. And was like, yo, dog.
I had two or three people just come in the shop, like different people, like, yo, does Marcus know that there's other colors on those uniforms?
Yeah.
Like, did you know about this?
I'm sorry. I need to step up my Star Trek uniform knowledge is pretty good.
So we only bring it up for two reasons.
Yeah.
First of all, it's because I really love it when Marcus has to admit that he's wrong on
yep.
the podcast.
Yep.
It's like one of my favorite yep. things. The second is that we say so much bullshit on this podcast that's like unverified. And
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean,
so much.
Most, oh, come on, dude.
Most people are twins separated at birth. Vaults has been around for 22 years now, something. Yeah. No, it's all facts.
Yeah. And I love that we got called out
yeah.
on it.
Yeah.
So please keep it up.
Yeah. Take us to task.
Please correct us.
And let
wrong.
Me say
even
that,
about little things like that.
Yeah. And let me say, I'm really excited even more now for the new movie. Because you know that I'm going to be dialed in on those flight suits. We're
nice.
Going to see if there's anything.
I am going to be too now.
Yeah, so the B-Wing, well, I don't want to go on a tangent, but the B-Wing is super interesting to me because do we see the B-Wing in the movies? I don't think we do.
I can't identify what a B-Wing
it looks
like
a T.
In my mind. Oh, that's right. Okay.
It looks like a T.
Why don't
right.
It's the modified.
Obviously, you call it a B-Wing then.
Yeah, modified bomber after the Y-Wing. That I know because I have since gone down the rabbit hole. But
well, okay, so that was this week in Marcus's... mea culpa.
Yep. So sorry, fans.
Marcus culpa.
I won't mistake Star Wars flight suit colors anymore.
But he won't. It won't be the last time we
oh,
have this
no.
segment.
No.
It's time for the citizen question.
Burr, 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 burr.
I love that. That was great, Marcus.
Thanks,
man.
Is that like a mouth bugle?
Yeah, it's a mouth. That's your mouth bugle.
Jeff asks, In your opinion, which is all we have, which comic series has the best ending and what makes it stand out amongst other comics?
Mm. Mm.
This is just like a straightforward, good-ass question.
Yep. Yeah.
I just love this question.
Well, who's jumping in?
Well, Nick, why don't you kick it off? If you love it so much.
I'll answer it.
Why don't you answer it?
Why don't you marry it?
Because endings are tough, and we all know that.
There's a lot of bad ones. A
lot of bad ones. Some books that I really, really like ended in ways that I don't love. So Planetary is one of my favorite books of all time. It will always be one of my favorite books of all time.
Mm-hmm.
The ending of that book did nothing for me. I can't even tell you like the salient details of what happened.
It's a little fizzly.
It fizzled out.
Fizzled out, yeah.
Yeah, after the big buildup. It also was delayed by many years, and so the anticipation was building even more. But it's such a fantastic book, and it did not end the way that, you know, in a way that was super satisfying. It was very forgettable. And I think that's a lot of comic book endings, a lot of endings to things in general.
Yeah, period, I think.
Forgettable.
Yep.
So I started thinking about what are endings that were strange or did things in a weird way. And Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four is the first thing I thought of. Mm. His run on Fantastic Four is epically great. If you haven't read it, if you don't care about Fantastic Four, just dive in.
I agree, 100%.
It has so many things going on. It has so many threads going on. I read a summary of like all the different plot stuff that happens over the course of that like five or six graphic novels. It was just brilliant. So, so good. And the way that he ended it, when he wrapped all those threads up, all these big story beats, is he basically spent a year, and it's a single issue a month, so 12 issues or so.
Yep.
And with each issue, he just spent some time with a member of the family wrapping up their arc. Now, these characters were not like dying. Like, they're Fantastic Four is going to keep going. Some other writer is going to pick it up.
Sure.
But it's just like we spent some time with Reed Richards. We spent some time with Sue. We spent some time with Ben Grimm. And it's like each one with the Moloids.
Yeah.
You know?
Those dudes were awesome.
With Doom. Like, everybody gets their own issue of just like, just wrapping it up and 30 to 40 something pages of resolution for this massive journey that Jonathan Hickman took us on for Fantastic Four. It was so cool. And each one kind of stood on its own. I thought that was a fantastic ending. I've never seen another creator do something like that.
There's so many characters. I mean, that's really cool that he took the time to...
Yeah.
Because it's a giant story and there's a million people that deserve time.
Which totally resolved itself. And then it's like, let's just take a slow burn and walk out of this series.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Absolutely loved it. Mark, is there anything spring to mind for
you? Yeah, so what really popped into my mind, there's a book called Half Past Danger. I've talked about it once or twice before. It's this beautiful pulp action comic that has characters that are, you know, homages to Indiana Jones and Captain America and Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe. It's kind of all your favorite childhood characters go on this great adventure, and it has Nazis and dinosaurs, and it's really great. But the ending of that book is nice because the way that it gets wrapped up, it's just like the comic creator knows exactly what kind of book he's writing. And when he wrapped it up, it was just like it ended in that pulp action way. There was the big fight at the end.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of closes. And you know that there could be more. There could be more Half Past Danger in the future, but you don't need it. There was enough there that the story could keep going and you could keep going with it in your imagination, but it also wrapped in just like this perfect pulp action movie kind of way. It knew exactly what it was.
So it in the way that like a lot of pulp ends, like until next time,
exactly,
or to be continued, but there probably will be no more of that book, and they knew that.
Yep.
Right.
But playing to that genre, they kind of,
it
that
felt
is cool.
Like that 40s action movie, and at the end, you know, it's like, and then it does this closing thing, you know, like, Indiana Jones will return.
Yeah.
Will he?
Or it gives you a hint. They find an item, or somebody's in the war room, or... You know, they're still doing stuff.
Yeah.
Super cool. It was just like that comic knew exactly what it was doing, and the ending just perfectly showed that and wrapped it up in this really great way that wasn't necessarily complete. They left that hanger for you on purpose. It was great.
I love that.
Really, really good ending.
That's kind of one of my favorite ending tricks in general, you know, where you're almost stopping the story in the middle, you know? It's like a good trilogy of movies or a good series of books. Like each one stands on its own, but they leave you in that good place where you got some resolution here, but you still got questions. Yeah. You still got room for more.
And it's not a full-blown cliffhanger.
No.
It's just, like, this universe is going to continue.
Yep.
These characters are real, and they're going to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not real. We all know they're not. Of course, they're not real.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man.
Who would think that?
Weird.
The other thing that you had mentioned as your runner-up was Sweet Tooth.
Yep.
And I just wanted to point out that I read that comic book on a bus, and I cried on a bus.
Yeah, so,
I was reading
man,
it.
The end of that book really, really sent me on an emotional twist. Another one I was thinking about was Lock and Key.
Yeah.
Lock and Key, good ending.
Great ending.
Good ending on that one.
Can we go back to Sweet Tooth for 1 second? Because the last issue was Giant and Fat,
mm-hmm.
and it ended 3 different times. Do you guys remember in that last issue where you, like, 1/3 of the way through the book, like, you thought, like, this is the end part?
Yep.
No. And then the roller coaster goes down and up. And that book had, like, 3 or 4 endings.
Yeah.
In one ending issue.
And that's like one of those endings where it's like the Harry Potter ending where like we're gonna show the rest of not Harry Potter, but like we're gonna show the rest of their story. This is not just the resolution of this adventure.
Yeah.
This is like the resolution of their lives.
So I actually was gonna bring up that Harry Potter ending because it's probably one of the most debated endings of current literature.
Because do people wanna know that?
Yeah, do people wanna know that? I love the wrap up chapter.
Mm-hmm.
The 20 years down the road, you kind of see where things have gone, and you know that things have happened in between, but it gives you I love that chapter. So many people dislike it, though.
It's tough, because sometimes you just want to leave them at the end of the adventure, and then you imagine whatever could have happened.
Yeah.
And that denies you that, right? And Sweet Tooth did the exact same thing. Like, that we know exactly how the rest of his life ends up.
Yep.
But
you know,
amazing.
With stuff like that, so long and so big, right? I'm on both sides of that fence. Like, I want to know and I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Because, like, so much bad stuff happens to Sweet Tooth. His journey is so horrible. And I would argue that Harry Potter, too. I mean, the trials that those characters go through, you know, to the final battle with Voldemort. I mean, like, people die. It's a horrible nightmare, you know, really, when you take it. And so, you know, given that, knowing that things kind of work out at some point in the future.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Yeah.
You guys see that it's Voldemort?
I was just going to bring that up. You,
Voldemort?
That this week.
The T is silent. Just found that out.
Really?
Yep. J.K.
Rowling just like confirmed it.
Yeah.
What?
I know. Nobody knew. She said she just gave up correcting people.
Yeah. Oh, if you want to see the coolest Harry Potter thing that's come out recently, a little side note.
Yeah.
Someone just sent me this because they know I'm a Harry Potter freak. They are releasing all the Harry Potter books in house-specific bindings.
Good lord!
There's like a red and gold Gryffindor set, and it's all gold leaf, and the Hufflepuff one because I'm a Hufflepuff.
All right, save it for the YA podcast.
Oh, it's so good.
So
they look beautiful.
Curtis, was there any comics that came to mind for you?
Yeah, we're just going on and on, so I'll keep it short. But All Star Superman, which is one of my favorite comic books of all time, we waffle on if that's the number one best comic book of all time, probably the best Superman story of all time. I'm going to spoil the ending right now.
So if you haven't read All Star Superman and you don't want to know what happens at the end of it, don't listen.
Yeah.
Starting now.
Here we go. So the whole story is Superman gets cancer. He gets too much solar radiation.
The premise.
His supercells are dying. So he has to do this grand adventure, almost like these 12 trials. He's writing his will. The end of the book is Superman. The sun is dying thanks to Lex Luthor and his nefarious plan. He flies into the heart of the sun and becomes the heart of the sun. He becomes the Vitruvian man. He builds a machine and labors every day, all day long, to keep the sun alive, to keep the earth alive.
So that is on the spectrum of endings that's just like so epic that it baffles the mind.
Yeah,
it's not like a quiet, like end of life kind of ending, like Sweet Tooth. It's just like, it's just the biggest idea that you can conceive of, and that's what Superman's doing, and the story's over.
I have a lump in my throat talking about it. That's how much I love it.
I don't even think that, like, so that is a spoiler, technically, but the journey of that book and the way that each book, like, you go through the labors that Superman goes through in every single issue, because he has to, like, do these impossible, like, labors before his death is the idea. And that's the point of that book. It's not what happens to him at the end.
No.
It's not about a big story arc that concludes with him flying into the sun. That's not what the crux of the book's about.
No.
So,
no,
it's a spoiler, but it doesn't, you know.
No, there's a point when I'm reading All-Star Superman before I read the whole thing like 50 times where each issue is its own thing.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Where it's like you just grab, pick a random whatever issue and read it.
Yeah. There's an issue of All-Star Superman that I will not spoil because I think it was issue 10. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Earth Q?
Earth Q.
Oh, brother.
And it's got one of just the best moments I've ever read in a comic book, and it was in the middle of the series, and it is not the conclusion, but it is like, don't spoil that.
No.
Yeah.
I read that comic twice. I read it, and then I immediately read it again.
Yeah.
That almost never happens. So,
Jeff, that was a great question. I love talking about endings.
Stop into Vault of Midnight for your free Super Skull hat.
Oh, I think he already has one.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Then congratulations. You get a new free Super Skull hat.
Cool.
You've earned it.
You've earned it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Please send us questions. You can send them to us. The best way to do it, superskull@vaultofmidnight.com.
Yeah.
Just email them right over.
Yeah.
You can get through that to on our website, superskullshow.com. There's a little contact thing at the bottom there. Gentlemen, it was a pleasure.
Yeah.
As always.
As always. Thus ends another issue of Super Skull, the Vault of Midnight podcast. You can hear us every Wednesday wherever podcasts are found. Our music was created by A-Bomb. Our logo was designed by Philip Wong. Our producer is Rachel Polk. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Super Skull Show is our handle. Check out our website, superskullshow.com. Super Skull is brought to you by Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff since 1996. This is Nick Weibar for Curtis Sullivan.
That's me.
And Marcus Schwimmer.
That's me.
Wishing you very good reading. Until next week.
Man, Y-Wing pilots definitely have the coolest helmet. Look at this fucking helmet. It's got like the chin guard.
Oh, yeah.
Probably from when you're dropping all those bombs.
It's because Y-Wing pilots fall down a lot.
Why you got to be like that? That's such an A-Wing pilot thing to say. Like, oh, they go slow, so they're not as fast as us. Yeah, motherfucker, that's because we got things to blow
they can't
up.
Go, they can't go too fast because it's disorienting and they're clumsy by nature.
Or maybe because their ships are full of high explosive grade torpedoes. I don't know. Maybe that's
slow it down. Slow it down.
Yeah. All right. Well, when you're on the ground because you crashed your little speeder bike of space, and you're like, oh, there's an AT-ST. What do I do? And Y-Wing comes by. Boom, motherfucker. Thank me later.